As we've reported this morning, an extra 44 million people across the globe have been thrown into poverty over the past year because of spiralling food prices. That's according to the World Bank, which said food prices have jumped 36% on last year, partly due to rising oil prices. And with ongoing political stability across the Middle East and North Africa, it's feared that food prices could continue to rise. Hassan Zaman is a lead economist with the World Bank and chief author of its Food Price Watch report, published overnight. He joins you now from Washington, D.C. Hassan Zaman, welcome to Australian Radio.
Good morning, Fran.
A 36% jump in global food prices. World Bank President Robert Zoellick calls this a danger zone. Have we ever seen this kind of price spike before?
We saw it last in 2008, and we know then that it caused a lot of people to fall into poverty, and unfortunately we're seeing the same again. So yes, there have been precedents on this.
And when we talk about falling into poverty, the gauge for that is roughly living on less than $1.25 a day, is that right?
And that's right, exactly.
This 36% price hike, it's an average increase. Some commodities have spiked far and above that. What kind of specific price rises have we seen over the past year that have caused the problems?
Well, for instance, the price of wheat has gone up by about 70% over the course of the last year. Maize has also gone up by around that much, about 75%. Palm oil has gone up by about 55%. Soybeans has gone up by about 35%. And there are a number of reasons for this, Fran. We had some really bad weather events last year, problems in the wheat markets in Russia, Kazakhstan, Canada, Australia as well. So wheat prices started going up from the middle of last year, and that has had a knock-on impact onto the corn and maize markets as well. And given that corn is an input into many other products like meat, those prices also started spiraling upwards. So bad weather was one reason, but there were a set of other reasons as well. There were export restrictions as well that were imposed on these grains. And then there's also, as oil prices were going up in parallel as well, there's increased incentives to produce ethanol from corn, and that also is a direct competitor for food crops. So there are various reasons, yeah.
I want to talk more about that, the biofuels in particular, but let's try and put a human face on this. What does a 70% increase in a basic commodity like wheat mean for a family living in or close to poverty in the developing world?
I mean, just we have numbers which show that if you're very poor and you live in parts of Africa or in parts of South Asia or in other parts, you can spend up to 70% of your income on food. So, you know, I think just that number alone tells you a lot about what happens even when small price spikes happen to a poor person. They have to sacrifice on the quality of the food they consume. They have to sometimes skip meals. Now, sometimes they have to pull children out of school. Sometimes they have to sacrifice their health expenditures just to basically make ends meet. So it's a really rough ride for very poor people.
There was some vaguely good news that I noticed in the figures that the price of rice, I think, the prices of rice have been stable?
That's right. They've been relatively stable. I mean, they went up about 20% from June to December last year. They've been stable over the last few months. There have been good harvests in Thailand and Vietnam. And so that is good news for consumers.
And rice is one of those crops where we can enhance the goodness within it, can't we, to help with the nutritional problems?
Exactly. And I think that's fundamental because over the last few years, there's been fortified rice, which is increasingly available on the market, which not only provides you with the necessary calories, but also other key micronutrients, which poor people lack. And so I think increasing development of that technology and increased use of it will, I think, make a huge difference.
And let's talk about the growing global appetite for biofuels. You say that's one of the elements feeding into these price rises. More corn is being diverted to biofuels. That pushes the price of what corn is left up. But you say relaxing biofuel mandates when food prices exceed threshold levels is one answer to this. What is a biofuel mandate?
Well, some countries like the United States and Europe, and from what I understand in Australia as well, or in parts of Australia as well, have certain targets whereby the gasoline that's at the pump, a certain share of it has to be either biodiesel or ethanol. Ethanol in the case of the US and a combination of biodiesel and ethanol, I think, in Australia. And so those are mandates. Those are sort of fixed targets. And our view is that especially when food prices go beyond a certain level, those mandates could be relaxed. And if they're relaxed, they'll put less pressure on scarce food items whose stocks are low.
And it's an uneven burden that comes with higher food prices, isn't it? The tragic human cost of the poverty that it induces amongst much of the developing world. But then other parts of the world, high commodity prices are great. High food prices and prices for crops are great for the farmers who are selling them.
That's right. But what our research has shown is that it's the wealthy farmers and to a certain extent the middle class farmers who benefit in the poorer countries, where there are small farm sizes, a lot of land fragmentation, and so the rural poor suffer because they're net consumers of the food, whereas yes, better off farmers do benefit.
And to what extent do you think that high and rising food prices have fed into some of the angry and violent protests that we've seen across developing countries, including overnight in Uganda, but also the protests in the Middle Eastern countries? Is it a factor in that, and do you think we're likely to see more protests as food prices continue to rise?
I think in 2008 we did see protests which were directly linked to spiraling food costs. In 2011, in the Middle East, there are a variety of factors which contributed, but we feel that food prices were one contributing factor to these unrests. And we have figures in our latest Food Price Watch which shows double-digit food price inflation, for example, in Egypt last year, which was an increase from the previous year. So these things are very difficult to disentangle exactly what the factors are, but we certainly think the higher food prices were one contributor.
Okay. Hassan Zaman, thank you very much for joining us.
Most welcome, Fran. Thank you.
Hassan Zaman is the lead economist with the World Bank and author of the bank's Food Price Watch report released overnight, which shows a 36% spike in world food prices over the past year. It's 3 minutes to seven on Radio National Breakfast. Let's check the finance news now with Lexi Metherill. Hello, Lexi.
Hello, Fran. US stocks reversed an early slump after the US House of Representatives passed a crucial budget bill to fund the government until September. The bill now heads to the Senate, but shares in Goldman Sachs closed 2.7% lower after a scathing report on the investment bank's role in the global financial crisis by the US Senate Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations. The committee's chairman, Democratic Senator Carl Levin, has requested the US Justice Department investigate Goldman Sachs over its dealings in mortgage-backed securities, and its shares finished 2.7% lower. Shares in Google finished 0.4% higher. After the close of trade, it posted a $2.2 billion net profit. That's for the March quarter alone. However, analysts had been hoping for more, given its revenue in the quarter was $8.1 billion. Stocks had fallen in early trade in New York after more than expected people filed for unemployment benefits last week, but the Dow Jones Industrial Average closed 14 points higher at 12,285. Consumer stocks led the gains, and on the broader S&P 500 index, it finished pretty steady at 1,315. The Nasdaq is 1 point lower at 2,760. Stocks are lower across Europe. The UK's FTSE 100 has lost 47 points to 5,964. London-listed shares in BHP Billiton are flat, but Rio Tinto closed 1.3% lower after telling its annual general meeting in London that the suspension on uranium processing at the Ranger mine in the Northern Territory has been extended until late July because of flooding there. Most metals closed lower on the London Metals Exchange. The Australian share market lost 0.5% yesterday. Today looks set to be a modest session with the ASX by 200 fairly steady. It's up just 3 points. And taking a look at commodities, spot gold has risen since this time yesterday. It's worth around $1,474 an ounce. West Texas crude oil is also up again. It's worth nearly $109 a barrel. Tapas crude oil rose yesterday. It's fetching $130 a barrel. And the Australian dollar is worth 105.43 US cents, 88.03 Japanese yen, and 64.48 British pence. And Fran, that's this morning's market report.
Thanks very much, Lexi. And we're going to keep talking about the share market after 7:30. And the line the share market refuses to cross, why can't the index smash the 5,000-point level? We'll also take a look at the treatment of people with an intellectual disability within the criminal justice system. It's 7 o'clock.